All right. My name's Toby, and I'm an alcoholic still. Thanks, Dan, for that lovely introduction. We have a speaker tonight. Who's a gentleman who's regularly at these meetings. He's always at the 164 group on Tuesday nights. I've gotten to get to know him over the last, I guess, say a year or so since he's been coming. And while he's not a man of many words, he has a very honest heart. He's always here to help set out. He's always lending a hand to whoever is outreaches one towards him. One of the most guiding principles that we have in AA. And tonight's my privilege and honor to introduce Billy.
Hi, folks. My name is Billy. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Billy.
My sobriety date is May 5th, 1986. And it starts out with, I come from a good family. My mom and dad, my biological father and my mom, and I have a sister. And we moved around a lot. Dad had us move quite often while we were growing up. I won't spend too much time on some things. In 1970, my biological father died of cancer when I was about 10 years old. And so my mom remarried, and we moved back down to Florida after spending some time back in Missouri, my hometown. I've always had problems with socializing and you might think so, but talking a lot with other people. I usually keep to myself. I had a severe learning problem when I was in school. I had to repeat some grades and come to find out that I had dyslexia and I had some problems with my reading and trying to do math. And so I went to a special school for about 6 years, and then after that I went into high school. And high school was Catholic school, and I was brought up Catholic. I went to Catholic elementary school also. That's what's wrong with me. I guess it's what everybody says. I've always had God in my life, and I believe in Him and the Lord Jesus. They've been my saviors, and they've kept my arm's way of protecting me and the people that I love and I care about. But back to the learning problems. When I got into high school, I found that I couldn't keep up with the clique that was, the A's and the B students. Found myself with a crowd that liked to party and liked to drink, and so I started, socializing with them. And I got into the bad habits of drinking and doing drugs, and that's how my life went. I didn't stay in school. I went into the I joined in when I turned 18, in May I joined the Coast Guard, and that following. I got enlisted when I was 17, and then I got out of the Coast Guard. Well, I did 3 years and 9 months in the reserves. Found out that I was I was interested in being a firefighter, and so I started training and going to school and to be a fireman. And that just led to more drinking and more carrying on than I did. I just stayed, active as a partier. I thought that was the way to go and what's the things to do. I worked with my parents when I was days off from the fire department, and they all drank, and I drank too. That's how we did our business. It was after working all day, we'd do a cold beer or a liquor drink, I'm trying to think here. I would function as an alcoholic. I was functioning drunk. I would go to work and still have a buzz and sit there and do my job, and it was difficult. Sometimes I'd be in the back of an ambulance, you know, titrating a dopamine drip, which is a chemical that regulates the heart, so it would, you know, stay beating while we were transporting a patient to the ER. I did a lot of things that normally you wouldn't do when you're drinking or even when you were sober. I always had a buzz. I would get up after the shift, I would pull out of the parking lot and mix me a drink and start drinking from then on. I didn't stop. I don't have a lot to say. I started when I was 12, drinking a beer, sneaking out and having a cold, having one of those Colt 45s, and started drinking and progressed to everything else that you could mind alter a drug, you know. Drawn a blank. Some of you know this story. I was drinking, and I came. My parents were out of town, and I came home and fell asleep on my mom's new couch with a cigarette in my hand. And like they always say, don't fall asleep with a cigarette in your hand. You'll burn the house down or something. Well, I caught the couch on fire. Woke up with the smell in the house and drug the couch out. The next morning, I took the couch and I first called the furniture store to see if I could get another couch. And I found I was able to get another couch, just like the one that got burned. And so I had to get rid of the evidence. So I hiked this couch up on the back of my car. I drove it. I was stationed out in a little town that's outside of here. It's called Thononsassa. I had to take this couch. I was going to take it to the lake, Lake Thononsassa, and pitch it in the lake. So I put the couch on there, and I started driving down the street. And I had to go by this old grocery store that had the mirror windows, and the next door to it's the fire station. And the guys were out checking the truck in and stuff like that because it was in the morning. And oxygen fueled the cushion, the fire on the back of the car. And so when I rode by the mirror windows of the thing, I could see flames licking from the top of the car. And all the guys out the fire department, they're all outside just laughing, watching me drive down the road. They didn't even bother. So I pitched the couch, and you know, that's one of my drunkalog things that I remember doing when I was drinking and doing mind-altering things. I kept on drinking and doing things that we all know and have experienced. I got into AA. I parallel parked a little S10 truck underneath a semi while I was going down the highway while I was drunk. I broke a lot of bones, and the only reason why the trooper didn't give me a ticket for DWI is he thought I'd gone through enough. And I was a fireman, and everybody that was on the scene cutting me out of the truck knew me, who I was, and they were trying to, you know, hide it, I guess. But, you know, it's hard to hide alcohol when you're half. I had a blood alcohol, it was like 2.0 or something like that in my system. I was pretty trashed. And I remember being in the ER and they'd taken a spike. I broke my femur and they took a spike and they drilled it through your tibia. And they did it without putting me under any type of anesthetic. Yeah, they drilled it through, and of course I passed out while they were putting it through my bone. And that was in September of 85 when that happened. And while I was recouping, you know, hell, I went home from the hospital with cases of beer. People bring cases of beer into the ER, I mean into the hospital where I was staying at, and I was drinking in the hospital. I had a fifth of Wild Turkey that I would hit on while I was in the hospital. And swore that I would, you know, cut back on my drinking, and which didn't happen. They told me that I had to live with my parents for the duration while I was healing, because I had to learn how to walk again. And that was a trying period, and I learned how to do it by January. I had my walking back, and I was out of the house, so I could continue my drinking. I kept on doing what I was doing, just messing with the circumstances of what would get me into more trouble. About lost my job. Coming into they finally started tightening up on me when I came onto the job one time, and I smelled of alcohol, not the first time, but the battalion chief sent me home and said I needed to clean up. I started to like try to not drink anymore. Try to like, you know, what it says, you know, it just drink on the weekends or you know, when I was not having to work that week. You know, I'd get 24 on, 48 off, but I would try not to taper my drinking, or I would just drink at home and not go out. And back then they didn't do a urine test, you know, of drugs and stuff that we used to do. That saved me a lot. But how I got into this program, let's talk about that. I've been sober longer than I've been drinking now. And I was dating this gal, and I decided that I woke up one morning at her apartment, and I said to myself, I can't do this anymore. I got a beer out of the freezer and out of the refrigerator, and I drank that beer and I threw it down and I said, just can't do this anymore. And so I left my car. I don't know why I left my car in her parking lot, but I left her car and I thumbed all the way out to Thanona Sassa, and I took my mom's Toyota. And I drove my mom's Toyota to a treatment center, which a friend of mine, a friend of my parents, took me to a treatment center and took me to the men's Monday night meeting out in Temple Terrace for the first time before I decided to go into treatment, you know, before the night that I had the beer, and gave me you know, the place to go and what to do and if I wanted to quit drinking. So back to where I was talking about, I left the apartment and got my mom's car and I drove to a place called Glen Bay. And I checked myself in there I had to call everybody up on the telephone and tell everybody where I was at, and nobody believed that I would stick to the guns and quit the drinking, and I knew I had to, because I had a fear that I was going to hit somebody or kill somebody in a car or kill myself. And So I checked myself into Glen Bay, and I spent the 28 days there, and then they sent me out to another treatment center out in Brandon, Mississippi for two more months, where we went through the big book, and That's why my big book's all highlighted. It's got a bunch of things in it that, that remind me of and show me things that I need to do whenever I have a difficult period in my life, going through my day or through my life. I pick up the big book and I read parts of it, and it seems to help me out, knowing that I have a resource that I can lean on. Big books also used to have, I have a lot of phone numbers in them, but not anymore. You know, phone numbers are no good anymore. Everybody has cell phones, and you know, I mean, when I got sober, you carried a quarter in your pocket, and so you could make a phone call, you know. And I used to use the phone a lot. I used to talk to a lot of people that were in the program. That's what helped me keep me sober. I also use God and the Lord as a lot, because I always relied on Him to help me when I was in certain needs and certain things that were going on in my life. He was always there. AA has done a lot for me. It's helped me with my job. I was able to get promoted. Helped me helped me with my behavior. There's a part of the big book says our behavior convinced them more than our words, and my behavior started to change from the way I used to be and the way I am now. Some people can't, you know, I've ran into old friends in the fire service, and they can't believe that, you know, that I quit doing the things that I did in my life. AA has helped me out so much that I got married in 1995 to a girl that I used to date before. She married another gentleman, and then she got a divorce from him. She was going through a divorce when I met her. And I met her, and we started to get dating, and soon we got married. And we had a little girl, and we've also had a little boy. And she had two younger sons, a 5 and a 3-year-old son. And during that time when I got married, I sort of dropped out of AA. I wasn't going to meetings. I was doing a lot of church, but I was. Things were going okay until I started. Old behavior started coming back. Just my self-centeredness, my ego, I wanted it my way. Things go in my will. And I had to. And she didn't like these things. We were married for almost 15 years, and she saw my behavior, and she wanted nothing to do with it. So we got a divorce. My kids now are 15 and 16, and I mean 15 and 17, and I get along with them well. We talk, and they know that I'm in AA. And It does a lot for me. AA has helped me be a better person. Try to be more outgoing. And trust in God and doing the steps. Doing the steps helped me as a person. Because they seem to help. They helped me in all kinds of situations. And that's all I got.
That's all you need.
Good job.
Yeah. Billy.